Hey, New Rockstars fans, the upcoming audio is going to be a sneak preview of our new show, Westeros Weekly. It's going to cover all the big questions that you guys have after every week of a new episode of Game of Thrones. We'll put that out every Monday, and then we're also going to release on the new Westeros Weekly podcast stream our Game of Thrones breakdowns that we already do on YouTube. In fact, they're going to come out a little earlier for you on the podcast, so make sure that you subscribe to the Westeros Weekly audio feed so you can get this show and those breakdowns coming up soon. So again, this is just a preview of that new show. You got to subscribe to the other stream if you want more Game of Thrones content. All right, bye. Hey, welcome back to Westeros Weekly.
Yay!
We did it. We came back. It's happening again. I'm Philip Molina, and with me this week,
Eric Voss.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. With Game of Thrones Season 8 upon us, we are kicking off this season of our Westeros Weekly after shows with two preview episodes over the next 2 weeks before the season premiere hits us on April 14th.
Yeah, it's been almost, can you believe this? It's been almost 2 years since Season 7. I was, what, 15? This is crazy. Yeah,
I wasn't born yet.
Yeah. That is so believable. We know that you guys probably don't remember that much. I'll be super honest, even though we're super fans, like, we still had to remind ourselves of how much happened in just in last season alone.
Yeah,
honestly,
it's all hazy up there. You know, you may have vague memories of things like Grayscale or Grey Worm. The movie The Grey, the wolf movie, the Liam Neeson movie. It's part of the cinematic universe. Yeah, it's canon. It's part of it.
It's just happening. Liam Neeson is having a side story, side quest, and then he'll show up suddenly. All right, so we're here to cut through all of that fog and get all of your lingering questions answered. That's the purpose of this show, is answering your guys' questions. Of course, we're still going to do our breakdowns. Eric's going to do a great job on that. I'm excited for those. But that's where we'll do the deep dives and get into all the imagery and all the things you missed. Here, it's all about you guys and what you're wondering about and whatever it is that every week, hopefully the whole world is probably freaking out about, we'll react to that first here. If you're watching this on YouTube, also remember, you can now listen to it as a podcast.
Yeah.
We're really excited about that. You can actually download the show in audio form a little earlier than when the video comes out. But even more exciting than that, this will be like a little bit earlier. The breakdowns that you guys are always hounding Eric about in the kindest way of like, when's it gonna come out? And he's in tears about it. That's going to come out earlier on the podcast, too.
Yes.
Like, a decent amount earlier. It's so much faster to do the audio than the video of those breakdowns. So, if you guys are like, I need it as soon as possible to impress my friends at work or whatever, the podcast is where it's at. So, you're going to want to subscribe to that on iTunes or anywhere you listen to your podcast. Look up specifically, the feed is called Westeros Weekly, but it will have this show, it'll have the breakdowns, and it'll have any kind of special Game of Thrones related video or audio that we do during the season.
Yes. You can hear us on your commute, and then once you need that visual component, you can watch that later, and then you have both senses.
You ever hear a robot learn how to be human? You just did.
I have not learned yet.
For your commute, your visual senses can be simulated as well. Cortex.
I only have three of the five.
All right. So let's get started, as we always do on this show, with the biggest question that we have right now. And this is kind of developed since last season. It's a little bit of a theory that people are wondering about. So our big question, do we have? Does this come into us? Oh, we got the big question coming to us.
Oh!
It's a raven who threw a question at us. Let me see this.
You want to take that?
Yeah. That was for podcast listeners. A bird just flew into the studio and delivers the big question. Are you ready?
Bye, bird.
Yeah. Oh, flying backwards.
He's off camera, so he's gone.
All right. Podcast listeners loving it. So the big question, who betrays Jon?
Oh.
Which is very interesting,
good
right?
Question,
it's not something that people
bird.
Hadn't been considering, Well, I think this is Pokemon Battle Girl, maybe, is who kind of started bringing this to our attention.
A lot of you guys have asked us about this. Yeah. Well, a quick reminder of how Season 7 ended. It ended with that confirmation that Jon Snow is not only the son of Lyanna Stark and Rhaegar Targaryen, which we already knew, but that he's not a bastard at all. It was a legitimate son. They got married, and that makes him the rightful heir to the Iron Throne. More rightful than really any other character, unless you consider the whole conquest of the Iron Throne by
Robert the Usurper, technically, like, didn't have the right, so the Targaryens, according to them, would have more of a right to it, but sure.
Sure. Now, that news was actually brought to us by ace investigative reporter Gilly.
P.I.
She found that note of Rhaegar Targaryen, but you know you don't have to pronounce things right to get it right, as we know.
She just learned how to read hours ago.
So big steps she's taken. Yeah. Now, only Bran and Samwell Tarly actually know the full story. They had that conversation at the end of season 7, and one of them is going to deliver this news to Jon Snow.
Yeah,
presumably.
One will deliver it very insensitively and just like matter of fact, and the other one will just stutter his way through it until he cries, and Jon holds him.
But to get to this question of who's going to betray Jon, we know Jon already has some obvious enemies, right? Cersei Lannister, Euron Greyjoy. They already outright hate this guy when they had that big powwow at King's Landing.
And they've already teased that they're not going to be playing on the side that they're pretending to play on in this upcoming season.
Yeah, they're out for blood. But the reveal of his parentage might make some other enemies up north. There's a couple people who might want to stab him in the back, add those wounds to the scar collection that he already has littering his body.
His ripped, toned, scar-riddled body. Just like me. Now, I think it's important to note here that we don't mean... like, these are people who have secretly always been against Jon. I think that is almost the easy way out. It's realizing that him being revealed as a Targaryen changes the playing field for them, and it actually means, does Jon have ulterior motives? So these could be justified people, at least to some extent.
Yes.
So remember that, you know, Jon was a very decent dude, and he was kind to the free folk, and that got him stabbed to death just because of the difference of perspective, right, on, like, who your allegiances are. My point is, Snow knows betrayal. By the way, Snow knows. Potential name for a direwolf. If there's another one that's going to show up,
that's Snownose. Snownose.
Snownose.
A real coke addict.
yeah, exactly. This 80s agent direwolf.
Direwolf is he's like amped and ready
he
to go.
Gets stuff done.
He's going to write a ton of screenplays.
I like how in my head he was like potentially Air Bud equivalent, but you were like, yeah, but like a coke addict.
Yeah. Air Bud who gets disqualified for the season for substance
abuse.
All right,
so pick us up on the end of last season, Eric, with what we're talking about.
Okay, well, here's we were talking about this, how things just seemed looking a little too neat, a little too tidy at the end of last season. You have the good guys on one side, you have the Night King and the Army of the Dead on the other side, and then you have Cersei and Euron Greyjoy. You're just kind of waiting to take on whoever survives that battle between good versus evil, man versus nature. But there's no way it's going to be that simple, right? George R. R. Martin loves to subvert expectations, pull out the rug from under us, and anytime we start rooting for one character or for one side to win, we end up feeling really bad about ourselves.
That's
and
why I only root
for
the worst people.
Yes, because they seem to always come out on top. Now, so we're coming back to this idea of there's shades of gray, and there are other characters who seem to be on Team Jon and Daenerys who are probably going to flip on them, betray them, or let them down, or disappoint them in some way.
Well, or even just disappoint and let down Jon, right?
For sure.
Like, so first up is his partner in all the boat rocking we saw last season, and his auntie, Daenerys, right?
Yes.
I actually don't think that she would mind being related to Jon. Remember, it was a different time. It was the 80s. But there's even the chance that, like, maybe she makes that like him more. Remember that that is a Targaryen kind of tradition. They try to keep their bloodline very pure. They purposely did it. A lot of times they would wed brother to sister.
Mm-hmm.
So she might have no problem with that, but she might have an issue with him potentially having a claim to the Iron Throne.
Yes.
We know she's been pretty intense about her being the only rightful heir. So as the only surviving son of the firstborn son of the Mad King, he technically does have a stronger claim. We went over to that for a second ago. But she spent, seven seasons thinking that she should be the rightful ruler of Westeros and practicing. Meanwhile, he's, like, got good at dying.
Yeah, absolutely. Daenerys' whole claim is that Robert's Rebellion was illegitimate. He stole the throne. That was not that broke the Targaryen dynasty, and that forced her into seclusion and exile. But now that she's still alive and she has an army, mm-hmm. that gives her a stronger claim. But now that Jon, as a grandson, he has a definitely stronger claim. And her whole idea is that she wanted to break the wheel, right? She wanted to smash the patriarchy.
Right, how'd you say it?
I'm going to break the wheel.
Yeah, I'm just gonna like pimp Eric out and make him do impressions as often as I can.
That wasn't a good one. Pimp me out for ones I could do. Yeah, last week was Aria. I don't want to do an Maisie Williams voice.
Let's hear
voice.
Pepper Ann next. All right,
that's a deep cut. Now, so here's the question: is she gonna conquer all that land with her dragons just to give up the crown to a very handsome nephew that she's hooking up with?
No.
She's a Mad King's daughter. She has a temper. We saw her burn Randall Tarly and his son Dickon Tarly, and that was very recent.
That is not his name. Oh, yes, it is. Yeah, that's fine.
And like she had a chance to show mercy to them and win over some of the lords of the crown lands or the friendly to Highgarden people.
Yeah.
And she said, no, you guys were assholes. I'm going to burn you alive in front of all of your men. So this is the daughter of the Mad King that we're seeing right now. Yeah. She still has a temper.
And like not to get too sciencey or whatever, but mental illness is many times genetic. Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. Some people were saying that with the Targaryens, it's proven it's not like, you know, how Cleopatra's brother through incest
I know
was a monster.
So much about that.
They don't have physical deformities, but it does lead to some kind of like a couple screws
loose
in the head.
Brain deformities.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I think there is a decent argument there, honestly. I think that would be great conflict, too, for the upcoming season, is introduce these two lovers and then immediately have them at odds with who, you know, should be in charge. I don't know that Jon would stand up to that, right? Like, he might be like, whatever.
Right.
You do you, girl.
Yeah.
But it just would be really interesting. Could you imagine if Romeo and Juliet actually climaxes in, like, the fact that they have to now fight for the Montagues and Capulets and like against each other, that, you know, while being in love with each other.
There's a whole better epilogue to that
play. Shakespeare, come on. Yeah. Like, learn something, right?
Know when to end your stories.
Yeah. So that's one potential solid option. But also, there's another semi-blood-related option of someone I think that could potentially cause them some drama. And I think we saw hints of that. And that's Sansa.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. She's gone against Jon before, right? Especially when Littlefinger was influencing her. He was really trying to set her up to potentially, he thought chaos was a ladder. He very much thought that she could be the one that's left over at the top of that. Mm-hmm. So if you remember the Battle of the Bastards, she called in the Knights of the Vale without telling Jon.
Yeah, that was weird. She didn't
tell
him.
Huge power move. Yeah. Saved the day at the same time. So of course she's legitimized.
It would have been nice to know that. Maybe rethink a strategy. Lose fewer Northerners.
Yeah, you ever do something like that is like technically bad, but then it works out so you don't apologize?
Yeah, it'd be like, it ends justified the means there, right?
I'm referencing something specific you did to me, and we'll talk about it later.
We'll never get to that. I don't know.
So Jon was running around at that time. He was running around Westeros, you know, being like Johnny Appleseed of whites. Just I don't really know what I mean by that, but he was planting an apple of a white in every different place. You know, I didn't grow up speaking English.
Did Johnny Appleseed kidnap an apple tree to prove to other people that apple trees existed?
I thought he was the founder of Apple computers in the 70s in a garage with a big.
Favorite
giant.
Ashton Kutcher movie.
Yeah. All right. Yada, yada. Jon is climbing a beanstalk or whatever around Westeros, but Sansa stayed in the North. Mm-hmm. And what does the North do? They never forget, especially when it comes to Targaryens, who they fought a war against not that long ago. In this culture, you pass your grudges along to your children.
Oh, well,
in our culture, too. Mm-hmm. So Northerners are already going to be very pissed that their king bent the knee to a Targaryen.
Yeah.
That's not something that's really gone around yet. So when they find out that he is a Targaryen, that umbrage of the Umbers that's going to come.
Oh, yeah.
The conniption of the Karstarks.
I love that alliteration.
Those both start with K, right? Sansa takes her ruler duties very seriously in managing her alliances.
Yeah.
Maybe she takes that as seriously as being a Stark, which technically, by the way, like she's going to feel like she's really the Stark here, not him.
Mm-hmm.
Could Sansa siding with the Northern Houses be something she does against Jon and maybe be that bittersweet ending that George R. R. Martin keeps alluding to and maybe testing by us to see if that's how he should end his books, because that's clearly what he's doing, is wondering what we're going to like. Could that be it, though?
Yeah.
She would get to complete her journey. That's basically been her arc, right? Become some independent, actualized leader at the expense of potentially what's going to turn out to just be her half-brother / cousin.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that she also, sorry to keep going here, but remember that if there's a character that she's most like now, it's Catelyn Stark, who is the one person who was able to have almost like an allegiance to technically raising John and, you know, making sure that he's fed and cared for, but no love for him, right? Yeah. She didn't want to see him succeed.
If there's any character that she's more like, it would be Cersei. Like, there was some evidence at the end of season 7 that she was picking up some political tactics from this woman that she hated. Too. She tricked Littlefinger into coming into what was essentially a false trial, not unlike the Green trial that blew up the Sept of Baelor, which, you know, there was a fake trial that ended up just being a trap, the same way that it was for Littlefinger. So she's in many ways just as treacherous, potentially, as this woman who was basically her captor for years. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens. But there's another character, Sir Friendzone himself, Jorah Mormont.
Sorry, can you pronounce his name again very clearly?
Jorah Mormont.
I meant Sir Friendzone.
He has betrayed Daenerys before, right? He promised Quaithe from Karth way back in season 2 that he would never do it again. But that doesn't mean he won't betray someone else, especially a guy he's jealous of, the person who he feels could be a threat to his queen. Jon has been a bunch of things. Jorah was never able to be Daenerys' lover. He's like a son to Jorah's father, Jorah Mormont. He actually got the sword that Jorah Mormont was supposed to give to Jorah, but because Jorah sold slaves, he was exiled from Westeros.
Right, he's got like a sweet like sword holding spot in his cave or whatever he lives in.
Yeah, there was that moment where Jorah refused to take back Longclaw from Jon.
Well, and he does have
6.
Honor, right? And he does get that, but at the same time, he didn't really know, like, oh, but also you're going to take my girl?
But also, he's got that grayscale, and sure, it seemed like Sam cured it, but who knows what's going on underneath the surface.
And they say grayscale, if there's anything it's similar to, you'll understand, is syphilis. Mm-hmm. So this idea that it doesn't just have this grotesque way that it affects you, but also it drives you mad slowly.
Thank you for syphilis explaining to me all this.
That would imply that I have syphilis, but maybe we all do.
Is that the thing that you're mad about? I'm not gonna apologize.
Like, it turned out okay, so I didn't get mad. So I think Jorah is honestly just like an easy guess, honestly. Like, he might even try to betray him and not even be the biggest betrayal.
Yes.
You know who I think would emotionally be the biggest betrayal for Jon? Arya.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point.
So they were very close as kids, even though she clearly has changed a lot. If anything, she's grown far more than he has. He might be, you know, the king in the north, but Arya is like she's unknowable to the person that she was before.
She's the stranger.
Completely
incarnate,
shut down. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, now she slits throats and wears people's faces on the reg. I think that she'll still be cool with him when they reunite. Initially, she talked about being a fan of dragon riding and the warrior kings, Visenya and Rhaenys, I think.
Rhaenys? The other sister.
Yeah, it rhymes with, anyway. And so I think she will be jazzed to potentially have Daenerys in her family. They can talk about killing lords and other fun, like, girl stuff. But that said, like, maybe if it matters to her more to like, a lot. It's tough. Now that I'm saying this, I'm wondering, like, I was about to say, if she needs to side with Sansa for some reason, maybe she would turn on Jon. But as soon as I was about to say that, I was like, maybe we should be wondering, is Arya going to turn on Sansa?
Yeah, I don't know if Arya's that interested in northern politics, you know, and whether Jon was right to bend the knee to this Targaryen interloper. To me, Arya's journey has been more defined by her kill list and her desire to get revenge.
So that's
an
interesting point. How about the fact that, does she care more about succeeding, completing her kill list than she does about defeating the White Walkers?
Yeah.
Protecting Jon in
That's
any
what
way?
I think. I don't know if she, it may be a form of betrayal. I could see her leaving the battlefield altogether and being like, you know what, this isn't my fight to fight. I need to go down south. There's people who are still walking and breathing who need to die right now.
Let me give you an image. It's gonna be ridiculous, but at least it'll explain, like, conceptually what could happen. She's in battle. She's like being a badass, just like swinging around people's necks, slicing their heads off, and she sees in one part Jon is fighting, you know, who knows, the Night King or something. They're having like a badass battle, and she like is like, oh, maybe I should go help him. And then out of the corner of her eye, she sees Cersei trying, you know, find her contact lens on the ground or something, and she's like, oh, but I could knock out my kill list right here and someone I hate so much, and be torn between helping her brother and someone who she loves and fulfilling everything that she's been training for and like her mantra, right? She almost brainwashed herself.
Yeah.
What do you think is more likely?
I think it's more likely that she goes back to her mantra. I mean, what I hope happens is some kind of like cyclical repetition where the way the Hound left the fight at Blackwater and he saw fire and he goes, "F this," and he left. I kind of want Arya to repeat that move.
What do you
think
her trigger would be?
ice versus fire. Right?
Yeah. She sees an ice cube.
Or maybe someone dies, and the Battle of Winterfell ends very poorly for the heroes, and they are left scrambling, and they all are scattered, and her direction that she ends up is south.
Right, the Battle of Winterfell is episode 3, mm-hmm. I think we've heard this season. That's, you know, the midpoint, right? Like, if we're going to end structurally on a win, hopefully, fingers crossed, then the midpoint you probably are going to be at their lowest low.
Yeah, it needs to be it needs to be a mess at the end of that battle, at the very least. But let's talk about everyone's favorite eunuch, Varys, right?
Yeah.
That guy's, he's always got something up his sleeve.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We don't know what his whole game plan is, but he claims to serve the realm and that he believes Daenerys is good for the realm. And so long as Daenerys stands by Jon, you have to imagine that Varys would too, but he's got a very confused outlook. He was told by Melisandre that he would die on Westeros, and that kind of that screwed up his mind a little bit. So you have to wonder what he's working on. I kind of feel like when Littlefinger died, that kind of changed the rules of the game on the show to where like cunning tacticians and political masterminds like Littlefinger and Varys have lesser of a role to play in these.
Yeah,
final
it's events. Almost the famous scene from Indiana Jones, right, with the guy who has the amazing sword play or whatever, yeah. And then Indy shoots him.
Yeah, Harrison Ford had a dysentery that day and
syphilis, I think it was.
oh boy, but, lawsuits coming in. Oh, the Raven's back with a cease and desist.
but I do think that you have a point that you know, the people that we see die on the show are the people that don't adapt and change.
Yes,
and Littlefinger, we're going to talk actually about him next episode, I think, about what his real deal is. But this episode, it's worth noting that if he is dead, that it might be because he stuck to his version of playing the game while the game was evolving and he didn't evolve with it.
Yeah.
Now, Varys is probably the person that played the game most similarly and very much always has these secret games that he's up to. His whiz in a box, right? Yeah. We talked about that earlier. I think that one thing to note, though, is that if there's a singular motivation, it's the good of the realm. And I think it's not hard to think of what side he's going to be on unless Danny dies. And if Danny dies,
changes everything.
I mean, this guy is so planning ahead. You know, he's got like, all right, who's number two? Who's number three? He's he's got his order of succession. Yeah. It's a Secretary of Education on there somewhere. I'm wondering who he immediately aligns with if Danny goes.
I mean,
down.
Tyrion would probably be his go-to at that point, maybe.
Which is interesting because does Tyrion want to lead?
I don't know.
All right, I feel like those are a lot of good options. I want to take some people just off the plate of just I don't think that's going to happen, and it's just honestly just they're too honorable.
Mm-hmm.
Brienne and Davos.
Yeah.
I think both of those people just like don't understand what it means. Yeah, like loyal to a fault, probably.
Maybe.
Yeah, I saw this great thing of just like nobody says anything and Brienne's like, I swear allegiance to you. Yes. You know, like like she's just so ready.
You don't have to swear allegiance, right?
Yeah. I think they're too good for this. I think they're the noblest, most honorable characters on the show.
Sure.
They'll probably poison everybody and run off together because I said that.
yeah,
but, you know, hey, this picture could be their wedding invite.
Oh, yeah.
Podcast listeners, it's Brienne and Davos just making out fiercely.
Be lucky that you're listening to this.
cool. So now before I get to the strongest candidate to betray Jon, I want to ask you who you think I'm thinking of.
Let's see. Strongest candidate to betray John. I can't read your mind.
Okay. I was just testing that, and I'm glad to finally find out it's true. Yeah. All right. Tyrion, dude.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, obviously. Tyrion, I didn't know if you had a more obscure answer.
Yeah, well, just Tyrion, like, has kind of become a little bit of a slightly watered down, more mellow version of himself over the years. He very much has, liked Jon in the past, but he's no stranger to lies and betrayal. And here's my big thing that I think is, like, secretly happening in the background. He's probably in love with Dany.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I mean, get in line. Like, who isn't?
Yeah.
but also, like, you know, Jorah's been on deck for a while. Like, all these people have reasons why they could betray Jon. Remember in the Dragon Pit in the season 7 finale when Jon angers Cersei by saying that he's already bent the knee to Dany? Tyrion tells him, have you ever considered learning how to lie every now and then?
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like maybe foreshadowing, potentially, of, like, there's something that he's not being honest about.
Oh, right. And then after that, there was that scene where he had a meeting with Cersei, and then it was after she revealed that she's, like, a tiny bit pregnant.
But then
we cut away from the rest of their conversation. They didn't show us how that conversation ended.
Right.
And I remember at the time when we saw that, we were like, you know, it's kind of weird how right after that, Cersei came back to Jon and Daenerys to announce, sure, I'll send my troops to help fight the dead. That's weird that would be Cersei's negotiating position, right? Like, you don't put your foot down and tell your brother you're pregnant and then back away from where you put your foot down earlier. That's odd. Now, Cersei didn't get to be queen, but be bad at negotiating or not having some kind of secret plan, which is about to blow everyone up at a sept. I think Tyrion must have offered something to Cersei secretly on behalf of the Stark Targaryen alliance. Like, some people are thinking maybe he promised Cersei that Daenerys would name Cersei's baby as Daenerys' heir. And I know that sounds crazy until you remember that everyone thinks Daenerys cannot have children right now anyways, right? So maybe he told his sister about Daenerys' lost dragon, Viserion, and told her to lie about sending her troops north, and Cersei doesn't need to learn how to lie from Tyrion. She's already great at it.
But Tyrion might have definitely, like, co-lied with her. It just definitely feels like if Tyrion is still in this story, it's not just to align with somebody else.
Right.
He's just too interesting a character. He is the, you know, we were talking earlier about that thing you did to me, but it ended up being for the greater good. Mystery. I think that absolutely that's the kind of thing that Tyrion would do. He's almost a more active, aggressive version of what Varys does.
Yeah.
Of like, look, it's for the greater good, even if it means ultimately betrayal. He also has no issue with being accepted as a villain and somebody who's, you know, no pun intended, but looked down upon, right? Like, he's like, fine, I'll play that role. I'll be the bad guy if it means that we win at the end of the day.
Yeah, his rage at the people of King's Landing during his trial is a good moment. He's not afraid to be a scapegoat.
And if you kind of think, like, you guys are like, nah, that's not my Tyrion, I'm going to remind you where we left Tyrion last season Dan and Jonny are on the love boat. So he made this face, and I love a thumbnail we made about this where it said, why he mad?
Why Tyrion mad?
Why he mad?
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, there's a lot of reasons, actually, I guess, why he's scowling. It's not just that they're knocking boots in there and he's not getting to play along. It's maybe he feels betrayed by both of them.
Yeah.
Right? To put that in front of what they actually have going on, he certainly clearly seems like he has the weight of the world on him in that moment.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's just mad that their love will cloud their judgment as they lose sight of what the real problem is. But maybe it's also true that Tyrion wants to save both, you know, the Westeros, but also the Lannister family. And maybe this lie, if it's possible, between him and Cersei will keep the Northern forces focused on the dead. And if they defeat them, the Northerners will be weakened, and it'll make them more likely to have to seek a truce with the Lannisters down south, bend the knee to them potentially. To do that, he would have to sell out Jon and Dany, probably compromise everyone's chances at surviving.
Sure.
And not having all the armies of Westeros to fight the Night Kings or having to fight a war on two fronts really hurts the chances of Jon and Dany and makes Tyrion's betrayal all the more bitter if we think that's where his character's going to go.
Man, I kind of, all that said, is like, wow, we made a decent argument there. Maybe he will do that. And then I'm like, oh, dang, I hate when your favorite character on the show might just piss you off real bad, even if it's for the greater good. What do you guys think? Yeah. I mean, let us know.
I think he's going to surprise us in some way.
Yeah. Let us know in the comments. If you're on the Himalaya app listening to us on a podcast, there's also comments on there that we can check out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I do. Here's the one thing. I think it's not going to go well for Jon, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's just a little too much allegiance going on. We already know that Cersei is planning something, but I think the fact that we know that kind of like lessens the surprise then. So that means something else is going to surprise all of us, John included.
Yeah.
Well, that's a story on who's potentially going to betray John. Mm-hmm. Coming up later on in the show, we are going to take your Twitter questions and do our best on answering those. But that's not the only way you can participate. I don't know if you guys remember last season, but we did power rankings where you guys actually help us figure out who's kind of winning Westeros week. And there's a lot of different ways, right? Like, even though Arya isn't most likely to end up on the throne necessarily in 1 week, she certainly ended up at the top of the power rankings on that first episode. You know, when she took out a whole family basically on her own. So what you can do, you can tweet those questions at us with the hashtag Westeros Weekly, but on that same Twitter account at New Rockstars, you'll be able to follow. We're going to post how you can help contribute to these power rankings each week. Then we use this really intense super mathematic machine, Devin's calculator, and we'll produce our weekly power rankings and then announce those every week. But again, you guys totally help us figure that out. So as a recap for where we left the power rankings last season, it ended with Jon, Cersei, and Euron Greyjoy, the Russell Crowe of Westeros, in a three-way tie for third place.
Okay.
Actually, Dany was in second place. And if you're wondering, well, then that's all the big characters. Who's in first place? Boom, the Night King.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right.
Obviously.
Because he certainly won that season.
Yeah, he knocked down the wall. He got a dragon. Yeah, he didn't lose at all. He's a great spear thrower. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you worship him in every way.
I thought we weren't going to get into my religious beliefs on this channel.
I said that's all we're going to get into. But anyway, so that was like 2 years ago, though. I mean, Eric went through puberty in that time. A lot's changed.
Yeah, reborn.
So you were reborn as a Night King follower.
Getting into my baptismal beliefs.
So I think that there's a chance that maybe with some trailers and some distance, maybe some power rankings have changed. Maybe somebody will finally throw Samwell Tarly the respect he deserves.
Yeah.
I mean, he cured Grayscale. He figured out Jon isn't a bastard. He's going to figure out probably how to start making Valyrian steel again, which is a long lost art.
Yeah, he's the hero of people who believe that just through research and reading enough Wikipedia articles, you can really change the world.
Yeah, if he were alive now, he'd have a dope YouTube channel.
Oh, absolutely.
Is what we're saying.
Yeah.
All right, just throw my man some boats, okay? So we're going to like update that in future weeks. Just make sure to follow our Twitter account. All right. So let's move on with what we were saying.
Hey, you held on to it this time, little guy.
I forgot that we were doing this Raven thing. A Raven has flown in with a question. Oh, it's a note for me.
Yes.
Do you like me?
I can't break someone else's wax seal.
Yeah. Send the Raven back. Send it
reverse
back.
Reverse flight.
All right.
Bye bye.
The Raven brings us a question from at Heaven Dragneel. Okay, yeah, this is a question that we've all been asking, right? Which characters do you believe will actually survive all of season 8? So, okay. Funny this person mentions that, because here's something new we're doing this season of Westeros Weekly. Deathpool.
Deathpool. Oh, yeah. Deathpool. So it is part of a cinematic universe, and Liam Neeson is part of it still? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah.
That Deathpool. Was my one Deathpool impression.
The Fox-Disney merger allows everything to be a singular.
Yeah, Disney owns all. Mickey. Mickey is going to take the throne.
He already sits on a throne.
The toilet?
He's on the toilet. He's got bad indigestion.
Right now. Don't look at me! All right.
Consume too much.
Okay, this is getting weird. So let me get back to this Deathpool. So what you guys need to do is go to guessthethrone.com, and on there, search for Westeros Weekly. We have our own poll there. We're also going to link to it on Twitter. And you guys can pick who you think is going to die during the final season of the show, and then we'll see if your predictions are actually better or worse than mine or Eric's. If they're better than Eric's, you can have his job. So, and then we'll shout out also the folks that do the best on the show. We're kind of like, say, hey, look who's currently doing the best on our pool. And then the grand winner will get a prize. Eric?
It's something better than my job?
Yeah.
My home?
$11. Yeah. All right.
that's better. I'll take the $11.
Yeah. Any form of payment, I'm sure you'd appreciate. Mm-hmm. All right. So in our next episode, we're going to go over who we think will live or die and why. I haven't finished all of my research on what I'm how I'm deciding that, but I do think that...
What is this? You took a different route. Oh, it's a different bird. I'm so sorry.
How embarrassing for you. Oh, yeah, they don't all look alike, Eric. We just got another Raven in. I love the people that are playing this in their car right now and swerving every time they hear, ca-caw! All right, so just a burning question here. Who's the bigger threat? So upcoming in the season, the Night King or Cersei?
Ooh, interesting that you're calling it a burning question, right? Because fire is important. From the first episode, we've known about this creepy looming threat from the north, right? That's the White Walkers, but there's also another threat, Cersei Lannister and her often poisonous wine. Sure, the Night King can turn a baby into a blue-eyed killer with just a touch, but Cersei can turn a man into a baby with just some truly killer side eye, and she doesn't even need to touch you. If she does, you'll probably die, as the Sand Snakes found, with a kiss, you can kill someone.
She had that big moment at the end of season six, obviously, where she blew up the Great Sept. I like you called it the Green Trial. Is that the name that people
People are calling it, yeah.
Cool. All right, dope. Basically, she knocked out all of her haters in one fell swoop. Yeah. Then in season seven, she was kind of a bit quieter, right? She was like laying low. She was just like chilling as like the dark black goth queen, which I actually was like there for sure. But then the Night King kind of took all the attention that season. That said, doesn't that feel like rhythmically that might swing the other way?
Yeah. She seemed to, what were her big moves, right? She got revenge against the Sand Snakes for Myrcella. She wanted gold from Highgarden. And then she has this pregnancy negotiation and then this possibly secret betrayal against the forces of the North. But I don't think we're done with her, right? Like, there's going to be more politics, more maneuvering. There are dragons and giants, magic, reanimated corpses. But the most important moments of the show, according to George R. R. Martin, are really the politics, the depths of human nature. How evil can people be in their pursuit of power? And no one has been the poster child of that more than Cersei on the show.
Right, and the Lannisters in general, right? The people who executed Ned Stark, the people who orchestrated the Red Wedding, right? Mm-hmm. So if there's one last ditch kind of like playing the politics, it's got to come through Cersei.
Absolutely.
So are we saying that Cersei's actually the bigger threat? You know, it depends she's the threat that could cost them the war with the Night King for sure.
Oh, absolutely. She could be the spoiler of that. And I think there was a theory that we brought up before that the Night King might fly Viserion south to King's Landing first. There was a brilliant person on Reddit who came up with this idea that he might go to the south to King's Landing, convert the army of the Golden Company and whatever forces the Lannisters have, and then Night Queen Cersei joining with him could join forces and become an equally deadly threat. Head back up north.
Man, yeah? I love when I can't figure out our way out for our heroes. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
which is like,
it
all right,
be as,
well,
dire.
Then you should lose.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So also, if season 8 is about to be this giant fantasy world version of a zombie movie, which, oh my God, that's how awesome this season's going to be, I just realized. What is the top lesson that we have learned from zombies and you know, previous movies and in TV shows? It's always about the other living humans that you have to worry about the most, right? Obviously, The Walking Dead. Oh my God, they are The Walking Dead, right?
We like, are the monsters.
Right,
Negan
exactly.
is more threatening now.
Right, at this point, yeah. I mean, it's kind of just like, you know, avoid the side of the road or don't go into forest or whatever.
I mean, Carl has been the most deadly character on The Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, basically.
He's too merciful. Stop letting in outsiders,
yeah.
Carl.
Cersei is the Carl of Westeros. Yeah.
Right, we all get what that means, right? Yeah.
Oscar and producer says same haircut.
Oh, that's what it is. She always wears that cowboy hat, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's how they cut it. It's a bowl cut with a cowboy hat.
For sure.
All right.
But
so,
she's not alone. She's got some weapons heading into season 8. She's got Euron Greyjoy. He's still fine. He's still trying to bet himself with a queen. Cersei's a good option for him.
You almost didn't say with a queen. She's like, he's still trying to bet himself.
Yeah, he's just trying to learn. She also has the fiercest navy of Westeros with the Iron Fleet. He has the Silence, the battering ram ship that's been unbeaten. He's currently shepherding the 20,000 member army of the Golden Company from Essos. And we saw a piece of that in the trailer, right? There was that guy leading. We saw that's not all of them, right?
It looks like 20,000 on one ship.
It's just round up.
Yeah, if you guys are listening to the podcast, it's a picture of Varys and Brienne making out. it just explains so much in these things. But talking about the Golden Company here for a second, one, I just think it's funny that if this really were truly following, the history of the world as it's played out, which he tries to sample from, very likely that they get caught in a hurricane, the whole fleet gets sunk, and like these people are just all on the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
But say that doesn't happen, and it probably won't. The Golden Company, just a reminder for you guys of why they're a big threat. They are the sellswords from Essos.
Uh-huh.
They're kind of like the Second Sons that Dario Naharis was the leader of. Yes. But honestly, these guys have a better win-loss record.
Yes, like, a different mercenary army.
Yeah,
yes.
And now we often establish on the show that mercenary armies aren't necessarily, they have no allegiance.
Right.
But that said, this is a very, very threatening one. Mm-hmm. This is also, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the one that's backed by the bank?
Yes, the Iron Bank gave Cersei the money to be able to pay for it.
Exactly. And so, you know, the Iron Bank definitely operates off of statistics. And mm-hmm. so they feel like this is statistically the biggest impact they can have on the war.
Yeah, so the Westeros equivalent of betting markets, right? Betting markets have the, yeah.
Yeah, Betty Markets.
Betty Markets.
Anyway, so they famously don't break their contracts, so we shouldn't have to worry about allegiance. The Golden Company says that their word is good as Golden Company. So that's a fitting pairing, actually, for the Lannisters, who always pay their debts. Uh-huh. Right? Like, well, they're not going to break their allegiance, and the Lannisters aren't going to forget, you know, what they owe. Their other motto for the Golden Company is "Beneath the gold, the bitter steel."
Ooh, that's a better, yeah.
That's a much better one, right?
As opposed to like buy our mattresses. Our word is as good as
gold.
We'll
never break our gold.
Yeah. Trade in your golden necklaces for mattresses.
Yeah.
Bitter steel. Go with bitter steel. Yeah. Why is bitter steel an important word here?
So, so that's a reference to obviously it's a reference to sword, right? The taste of sword in your mouth, not feeling too good. But also it's actually more specifically a reference to Aegor Rivers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bitter steel. Mm-hmm. They even carry around, this is amazing, his gilded skull.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning they literally carry with them a golden version of Bitter Steel's skull. Like, they dipped it in gold, held it, I guess, by like a stick, and then, you know, and then you dip it into gold. You remember.
Yeah. Yeah, I was part of an improv cult that did that.
Yeah, exactly. With Del Close's skull.
Yes.
Great. All right. So they're led now by this guy, Harry Strickland, of the boy band fame. Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he started dating
Yeah, exactly. It's been much better when he went solo. We think he's kind of like this Jaime lookalike. If you look at this picture in the season 8 trailer, I think it's very interesting that just as Jaime has left Cersei, a new Jaime is going to like show up and look mm-hmm. exactly like mm-hmm. the way he used to be and the version that she loved mm-hmm. instead of the like kind of weakling that she's come to know recently. Mm-hmm. In the books, Harry Strickland is chubby and gray-haired and complains about how much his feet hurt a lot. So it looks like they're going in a slightly sexier direction.
And there's probably a reason for that, right? Why like would you, other than people don't like to look at Uggos on TV screens in 4K, but there might be a plot reason, a narrative reason, in order to create some tension between him and Euron Greyjoy.
Yeah, what's
perhaps?
Funny is that you remember, again, Euron is trying to bet himself a queen.
Yes.
And so for him to bring over like this like pretty boy is probably not the smartest move.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that they're bringing in this new key player in this final season of Game of Thrones. As big as important as the Golden Company is in the books, it's like, wait, 6 more episodes. Why are we seeing them this late for the first time in season 8? Now, that could be mean that they're playing a bigger role in Cersei's endgame, and it could be more evidence for that theory we were talking about, that they're just there to be a larger army that the Night King can convert into White Walkers.
Right.
I can't get enough of that theory.
Yeah, which does a nice job also of my favorite thing in later stages of a conflict is actually going back to what we already have and then, you know, making that worse. Adding the Golden Company is a little bit adding a new player, but going back to what we have and, you know, converting them, great, they're just Night King people. That's much more interesting to me. Hopefully it goes that way. Yeah. Also, just a reminder, the Golden Company were formed by the exiled bastards of King Aegon IV.
Yeah. That's what started the Blackfyre Rebellion, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So he had a bunch of bastards, kind of like Robert Baratheon or Eric Voss. But on his deathbed, he legitimized all of those bastards, actually. And then he proceeded to fight several wars against Aegon's other children in the Blackfyre Rebellion. That's what those are, to take over the Iron Throne. So this is not only like a feared elite military unit we have here, but they're also one whose leaders are all descended from Targaryens, who all thought they should be the kings of the Seven Kingdoms. So I'm thinking that instinct is probably going to kick back in for them, maybe, if they do show up. This is if they're like going to be a better threat than just being part of the Night King's army.
Yeah.
So maybe they also, by the way, You could throw them out the door, right? Like, they don't have to not betray Cersei. Maybe they also could fight for the Targaryen king, since that's what their blood alignment is, or queen with Jon and Dany.
Yeah, that'd be a particularly cynical way for the show to end, that these game players that are game changers that we never saw earlier in the series are the ones who end up on the throne, just because they have another claim, and it's a way to show that the war for the Iron Throne is not as important as these characters have been making out to be. Now, they've been mentioned a few times before. Actually, remember Ser Davos was advising Stannis Baratheon, and Stannis brought up the idea of hiring the Golden Company, and Ser Davos was like, why would you do that? They aren't loyal. And then they had a big fight. But they are fiercely loyal to whoever pays them. So if they show up to fight for Cersei, will they sell out the living in the Great War with the dead? We also need to remember they have war elephants.
Right.
And
also
they got
like
big
Eric
money.
Ross.
Yes.
Yeah. There's an animated thing that they made for this upcoming season too, all about them. So clearly they're going to play some sort of a big role. So yeah, Cersei has a Golden Company on her side. But let's remember, she also got her own zombie.
Ah, yes.
The Mountain, and her old mad scientist, Qyburn.
Yeah, Doc Qyburn.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to go back. All right. So is he sitting on a cache of wildfire still, maybe?
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Does he have his own army of zombies that he's been working on this whole time? He kind of semi-perfected it with the Undertaker version of the Mountain.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe he has filled under King's Landing a bunch of those. Also, you know, they've been working on this. Remember, a way to wound a dragon?
Oh, yeah.
Remember his scorpion, the giant crossbow they called the Scorpion? Pretty effective,
right. Yeah,
actually.
Yeah. What's his? Yeah, he used that to take down in that whole loot train battle,
right?
And it worked.
Yeah, it's like, one of the few times where you know, just making a typical weapon a lot bigger made it more effective. It doesn't work with guns so much, but yeah. So that's a thing that is still in play right now that they could be used against the Targaryens.
Yeah, this is the first time that we've seen Cersei without anything to lose. Remember, at the end of season 7, Jaime told her, I'm the only one you have left. Our father's gone, our children are gone. It's just you and me now. But then he left. And then without her cooler-headed brother by her side, she could be even more unhinged. This is the woman who's blown up half of King's Landing. And she said afterwards that it felt good to watch them burn.
Ugh,
you know, she has become a mad king or a mad queen in her own way. And her only objective is to survive and stay in power for herself and for her, quote, unborn child, if that kid even exists.
Yeah, his supposed unborn
child. Now, we still don't know what the Night King wants, but his trajectory is pretty clear. He wants to march his army south and probably try to kill everyone in his way. With Cersei, it's hard to tell, right? She's holding her cards close to the chest. She's a powerful wild card with some wild card friends that makes her a bigger threat in a lot of ways to the end game of the series.
Cool. I think we talked to Golden Company to death. I think we should probably get to another question.
Whoa! Okay. He's getting is good at this.
Is this the same bird or a different bird?
It's a polite not to ask.
Okay, yes. Oh, this is the same bird. All right. So let's see what this note says. Okay.
almost took the camera.
Well, we have a bird indoors, which is not a good idea. All right. So speaking of Qyburn, at Maple Chiefs is asking, is there more wildfire? Was it depleted? Was it all used Baelor and the Blackwater?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I think there's a very good chance wildfire will play a part in season 8. You know, there's a question we asked after Blackwater, did they use all of it? No, Cersei was still making more of it. And it was they brought up several points that it was stored underneath important places in King's Landing, including the Great Sept of Baelor. And I think it would be foolish of Cersei to have used it all just to blow up that one major building. You would think it would be an important weapon to have not only against your enemies politically, but an enemy that is particularly vulnerable to fire, i.e. the Whites. Now, we don't know if the Night's King and the other White Walkers can be killed with fire, as opposed to just
probably,
his drones.
Probably, though.
Yeah, he can't cross it.
Oh, but he can put it out,
He can put it out. When he was chasing Bran in the Hold the Door episode, he was able to create, like, like Moses, kind of create a gap between it. But it is an effective way to burn a bunch of stuff fast, including an army of Whites, if need be.
Yeah, I don't think it was all used up at that big old, explosion of
green
season
trial.
6. Yeah, the green trial. They probably would have made a big deal about it if they were like, this is the only time we're ever going to be able to use this.
So every at least drop gone.
Yeah, glip, glip, glip. You know that Cersei and Qyburn are made probably getting more wildfire a priority, and especially interesting now that they can use it to kill whites. Jon's display of burning the captured white's hand in front of Cersei and Qyburn obviously would have taught them, like, hey, by the by, if you happen to have secret fire stash, maybe let's use that.
Yeah. There's also just this lingering threat of Cersei's nuclear option of burning down King's Landing, the whole city. Like, she mentioned a willingness to burn it all to the ground on more than one occasion. And when someone repeats a threat like that, you got to start taking them seriously. Fire and fury is never a good way to go. And recall that Jaime got the nickname Kingslayer when he killed the Mad King before he could burn down King's Landing. So Jaime and Cersei seem set on a collision course, I would say, in season 8, with their encounter could mirror his encounter with the Mad King. Could he have to repeat history? Could the Kingslayer become the Queenslayer? Would that fulfill the whole Voluncar theory that she was told in the books, that she would die at the hand of the younger brother, with her twin brother being born a couple minutes after her?
Yeah, it just depends on if he's a bigger fan of Queen or Slayer, right?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Totally missed. We got another question. Completely missed its mark, but Eric got it. Great.
I got it.
Cool. That looks like a broken wing, by the way. You're going to need to mend that.
He doesn't want to give up that note easily. Bye-bye.
All right.
Sorry, Devin.
Oh, God.
I'm so sorry.
All right. Okay. This is a very important question from at OMG Productions. Podrick's magic rod?
Oh.
Are we going to find out why it works so well? Why he mad? We've gotten a lot of variations on this question, actually.
Yeah,
you guys are kind
real
of obsessed.
Curious.
Yeah. Besides Jaime's hand, this is probably the most mentioned body part in the history of Game of Thrones. I'm going to go out on a limb.
How big of a limb are we talking?
What?
That's Eric. What they want to know. I'm giving them what they want, Phil.
Syphilis, remember. Okay.
No one wants it.
It's probably a pretty big limb is what we're saying. And I don't think we're going to see his, golden hand.
Would be a bit excessive.
We made it this far with no pod full frontal. That said, it's the last season. I'm going to guess the series is going to conclude with the image just in our imagination.
Yes.
We're not going to find out why. It's like the mysterious city of Asai.
Yes.
Right? Very similar. But like a penis version of that.
A penis high. Yes.
Yeah. We know from the season 8 trailer that we're going to see Pod in action. It looks like that action is probably going to stick in the battlefield and not in the bedroom.
Yes.
Though, I mean, you could get down on a battlefield. Yeah.
I think if there's one kind of dirty joke that will be finally revealed, it's going to be Tyrion's honeycomb in a jackass joke. It's not going to be Pod's rod.
How that plays out. I'm sure it'll pay off.
Hopefully. Well, there's much more to talk about next week, including some things like the Crypts of Winterfell, what's going on with Bran, and a major character that died in season 7 that might still be alive if you have enough tinfoil to wrap around your head.
Yeah. All right. So next week also is going to be the final pre-premiere episode. These preview episodes that we're doing that. Can you say that 5 times fast?
I can't even
say 5 times fast. all right. It's going to be our preview episode of Westeros Weekly. So if you have any other lingering questions specifically ahead of season 8, make sure to tweet at us with the hashtag Westeros Weekly. In the past, we also asked for users to send in artwork based on whatever stupid, silly bits we had during the show. Keep doing those.
But
your parents
exclude
will be proud.
Syphilis from your art.
Never tell an artist to limit themselves.
We don't want any creative interpretations of what it is. Let's stick to the textbooks.
all right. We would love people also, this is something new we're doing. We don't have a lot of music options here. We can't use anyone else's music. So if you guys want to submit like a jingle or theme song we can use as maybe like the outro of the podcast or of our show, we totally will maybe use it.
Yeah, channel your inner Ramin Djawadi. He's the composer of Game of Thrones. And send us something that will set the mood for our show.
I think feel free to have lyrics in there too.
Or just dogs barking over the Game of Thrones theme. You know, if you try to watch a show with dogs, sometimes they'll bark during it. Whatever you're feeling, you know, we won't say no to anything.
You guys, thanks so much for watching. No, that's a genuine thank you. You guys are great. Yes. Don't forget to subscribe both to this channel for ongoing Game of Thrones content, the breakdowns that are going to be coming just as soon as we can after every episode. But again, if you want them a little bit earlier or you want to hear this in audio form, Westeros Weekly, the podcast stream, you can find that wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at New Rockstars. That's where we're going to be posting all that stuff about where you can participate in the poll. That's where you're going to send your questions with the hashtag Westeros Weekly. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at Fimo.
You can follow me at EA Voss.
Guys, I'm freaking hyped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very excited. It's all happening. Right. Air horns and right. the like.
Let's work on getting those ravens less dangerous in future episodes, guys.
More dangerous. More danger.
All right. See you guys next time.
Sorry to give notes.
Bye-bye.